Section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants was given to Joseph Smith when he inquired about questions about polygamy in the Bible. Dr. Bill Smith has recently written a book that's just been out for a few weeks now on Section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants. I'm excited to be one of the first to receive a copy and also one of the first to interview Dr. Bill Smith about his book. So it's a great book, Textual Studies of the Doctrine and Covenants. I encourage you to go out and buy it. And you also, in these next few series of interviews, we'll give you a little bit of taste of the book. So it's going to be a fun conversation. I also want to remind you to go ahead and purchase our latest transcript from Newell Bringhurst. It's up on Amazon.com as well as on our website, GospelTangents.com. Now back to our conversation. All right, welcome to Gospel Tangents Podcast. I'm excited to talk to Dr. Bill Smith. You've got a new book coming out. Could you tell us a little bit about this new book you have?
It's called Textual Studies on the Doctrine and Covenants, the Plural Marriage Revelation. My original title was something like The Restoration of Hagar, but the editors thought that was a little too esoteric, so and it didn't fit in with their book series, so this is probably working better.
I kind of like the Hagar title better personally, but I'm with you there. So I understand that what's your PhD in?
My PhD is in math.
In math. So I have a master's degree in statistics, so we're, two peas in a pod here, I think, a little bit. So, and I also understand Richard Bushman. Did you know that he thought about getting a math degree?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I think all the best historians are mathematicians.
Maybe you know Pete Crawley. He was a math guy, too.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know that. So where did you get your PhD?
At the University of Utah.
Oh, right, a Utah man. And you're teaching, I know you've been teaching at the, I like to joke around as the Great Satan, but. So, where are you not teaching this semester, I
understand? Not,
no. Okay, but you have taught where?
Yeah, BYU.
At BYU. So, you're kind of a purple-blooded person, I guess, huh?
Yeah, in a way, sort of a mixture, yeah. I root for either team.
Okay, well, that's good. So, I'm a Utah man, so I definitely bleed red. Well, great. So, tell me a little bit about how you got into Mormon history.
Really was happened quite early on. I think I served a mission in what was then called the New England States, or just the New England mission, because it took in part of Eastern Canada too.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, huge mission. And it was then I sort of, being in New England, sort of started thinking a lot about early Mormonism. And when I left my mission and I got interested in doing research in archives. So, and it was about then that the church archives were wide open. And so they would allow any fool to get in there like me and ask for basically anything you wanted. If you knew what you wanted to ask for, you could get it.
Wow.
So it was great. It was a great time. And I spent more time there than I probably should have, but it was great. Yeah. So that was my start in it.
Wow. Now, New England, see, there's another connection we have. I grew up. I lived in New Hampshire for about 4 years. Did you ever make it to Nashua or Manchester or any place like that?
I think I was a week in Manchester taking somebody's place for a moment, but I was mostly, I think, in New Hampshire down by Dartmouth.
Okay. Now, I understand Brigham Young, I think he was born in Vermont, if I'm not mistaken,
yeah.
And Joseph Smith as well.
Right.
Did you ever see his stomping grounds or anything?
Yeah, in fact, I spent quite a bit of time down at South Royalton, which is where the LDS Church's kind of monument to Joseph Smith's birthplace is.
Okay, well, that must be near Sharon, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, great. So, Red Sox fan at all?
Yankees fan, sorry.
Oh, no. Oh, that's terrible.
Sorry, Mickey Mantle's my idol.
So, you know, we got the BYU-Utah thing and the Boston-New York thing. You must be a very conflicted individual.
Well, I have my moments.
Well, Well, great. Well, I'm excited to talk about Section 132. I was lucky to get a little bit of a preview copy. So we're going to release this probably right after the book's release. What is the release date on that again?
Officially, it's February 27th, but I think it's up on Amazon right now. So.
Oh, so you can pre-order that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, great. Well, good. So I've read about 100 pages of it. So I kind of like how you go through just, you know, verse by verse almost. And so, you know, I'd like to just kind of dive in, if that's okay.
Go ahead.
So one of my big questions, I guess, is it seems to me, you know, we talk about Doctrine and Covenants 132, and especially the LDS Church in general, as kind of a restoration of all things. I know, and I don't know if you've been able to see some of my other interviews. I've interviewed Mark Staker and Brian Hales. Have you seen any of those?
I think I saw Mark's, yeah.
Okay, so one of the interesting things that Mark said, and I know Brian Hales didn't necessarily agree with him, but, you know, as we look at, even in Section 132, it says that parts were revealed as early as 1831.
The header does. The header says that.
Yes, and so... I know Mark said something, you know, he had a very interesting theory about how polygamy was introduced. It may have been through a black Mormon by the name of Black Pete. Have you ever heard that before?
I've read in his book where he says something about that. I don't focus too much on the early kinds of beginnings or the theorized beginnings of polygamy. I think most of the stories about early kinds of revelations are post hoc. They're way late, basically, yeah. Long after Joseph Smith's dead. So what actually happened there, I didn't want to delve into that in the book at all. So
okay. More focusing on the text itself.
Yeah. In fact, I try to make an argument that the text of the Revelation is really an 1843 text.
Okay.
It may indeed have pieces, parts that come earlier than 1843, mm-hmm. But as far as I argue, at least in the book, it's really a structure that is an 1843 structure. It's an 1843 document, certainly by scribal accounts, it's 1843. As far as theologically, culturally, it seems like it's an 1843 document. I don't see too much in there beyond what's typically been said about the opening, the preamble of the Revelation being an answer to a question about Abraham. Abraham's polygamy. I think that could be a connection to Joseph Smith's translation of the Bible, but I don't see that as necessary.
Okay. So, yeah, I know Denver Snuffer, I don't know if you followed him very closely, he wrote a book, I think it was called Passing the Heavenly Gift, that I read. One of the things that... and I'm certainly no Snufferite, but one of the things that kind of appealed to me with Death Denver, and I don't think he's the best historian out there, but one of the arguments or theses that he said that I really actually liked was he kind of broke the Section 132 into kind of four sections, I haven't followed him. I don't know if he still believes this, but in that book, one of the things that appealed to me was the idea that Section 132 was really four revelations, and that the LDS Church had essentially conflated polygamy with the everlasting covenant, and that those really should have been separate. He talks a little bit about Abraham. So Abraham and Moses and, you know, that sort of thing would be one. I'm trying to remember what the other four revelations. There's a part to Emma. We'll definitely be talking about that today. But he kind of broke that into four. He said they were really four revelations that were kind of combined into a single section. So, I mean, do you agree with that, or how do you feel about that?
going back to what I said about it being an 1843 revelation, I think that it is clearly in its genesis a letter to Emma Smith. the entirety is a justification to Emma about why Joseph is and ought to be allowed to practice plural marriage and recruit other people to do so. She was up and down in terms of how she, whether she approved of the practice or whether she didn't. She had a terrible mental trial, or as most women probably did, at least to one degree or another, when they were introduced to the idea. And so I think this is, the whole thing is really structured as a letter to Emma Smith. Its component parts, I think you can deal with that like Denver did, as a theological document, saying this is legitimate, this isn't, or but I think it is really a unified whole in terms of its purpose. And my opinion, and I think this is justified, I try to argue this in the book, I don't think it was ever intended to be public.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I think that's true. I think it's fairly obvious. Not everybody would agree, but I try to argue for this in the book. That's one of the arguments of the book. So academic books tend to do this thesis thing and then argue for it. So my book is not like a theological sort of approach to the revelation. I do note the theologies that are connected to it, but more as historical objects than trying to argue in terms of my own personal theology or someone else's. So yeah, it's basically a work of history, I think. But yeah, I do delve into my inspiration for this book was really Peter Martins. I don't know if you know him, but he's a Bible scholar, and his work with Origen really started to make me think about how we treat Scripture in the LDS Church. And I think one of the most productive ways is not just to look at the documentary foundations of the revelations, which I think is a really important issue, and the Joseph Smith Papers has done a marvelous job with that, but I think it's an ongoing story, and so you have to look at the interpretive cycles, changes, the hermeneutic that's associated over time with the revelation. That's what I tried to do a little bit. I don't know how successful I was, but
well, like I said, I'm about a third of the way through your book, so it's been really interesting so far. So I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Bill. In our next conversation, we'll talk about how religiously literate Mormons are as compared to other people in other religions.
I think you're right. I think rank and file BYU person, BYU students, probably a lot more familiar with the Bible than rank and file, say, Harvard University student or something like that.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you like our page on facebook.com/gospeltangents. You can subscribe at YouTube at youtube.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at @gospeltangents, as well as make sure that you subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss any of our episodes. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our videos. Thanks again.